Now it happened when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day that the Amalekites had invaded the south and attacked Ziklag and burned it with fire and had taken captive the women and those who were there. From small to great, they did not kill anyone but carried them away and went their way. So David and his men came to the city, and there it was burned with fire, and their wives, their sons, and their daughters had been taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. So we start out this whole chapter with a big problem, right? What had happened is David had spent some time away, David and his men, his mighty men, they spent some time away. And in this time, you know, many would say it was a time of backsliding for David. It was a time that David was taking matters into his own hands. David was in reality just doing what he wanted to do and going into battle for selfish reasons. Or even right before this in chapter 29, he tried to join the Philistine army. He wanted to fight for the Philistines. He tried to join forces. Which if you remember who the Philistines are, they are the arch enemies, especially David, right? Remember he killed Goliath, the great Philistine champion? And these were the people, the Philistines, the enemy that David had desired to join forces with, to fight for, to fight with, and then also himself fighting and going into battle for his own selfish gain, his own selfish reasons. And this is the time that he was living in. And so they had gone out and they had been making their way around and attacking different areas. And what happened while they were gone is that these men, the Amalekites, invaded Ziklag, invaded their land, invaded the and took over and burned the city to the ground. And as they burned the city to the ground, they also took all of the women, the children, everybody, and they didn't kill anybody, they just took them with them. They took them as captives, perhaps as slaves. And so as David and his men, they come back to the city, and now it's a really bad situation. So we have a big problem here that David's facing. First of all, David, in his own mind, in his own heart, is recognizing the fact that he did this. He's the one. They abandoned the city. He led his men off doing the desires of the flesh, right? Fulfilling their own desires. That's what they were doing. And now they come back to find out David's like, man, I really messed up. So David's facing that reality that the city is burned to the ground. And it's because he led the people astray. He's facing that reality. And then on top of it, he's facing all of his own men who are mad at him because look what happened, David. Look at where you've led us because of selfish decisions, because of self-seeking decisions, because of taking matters into our own hands, because of doing things, because of our fleshly desires, because of desiring power or desiring wealth or whatever it might be. But those are the reasons that we do things, right? We're always looking out for ourselves. And for David, he was just looking out for himself. And he had all these men following him. It's important to realize your decisions affect so many other people. David made decisions and he was kind of a tyrant. Like, let's go, let's take out these people. Let's go take out this. Let's go to this land. Let's go to this land. And let's join the Philistines. And all these decisions that he is making, he's not realizing what that big problem is. And the big problem was they were neglecting their own. They were neglecting their people. And because of all the focus that was elsewhere, they came back and it was burned to the ground, and all of the women and the children were taken captive. So David had a big problem. The people had a big problem. It says then in verse 6, now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him. That adds to the problem for sure. People spoke of stoning him because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Now, remember, we studied this on Sunday morning very in depth about what it is to strengthen ourselves in the Lord. We talked about putting on the armor of God. And it was necessary for David at this point to stop doing things his way. It's important to recognize that David, he came back to the place of strengthening himself in the Lord because it was necessary. He was a broken man. He realized that the city had been burned to the ground. All of the people had been taken captive. And now his own mighty men who followed him somewhat blindly, they would follow him anywhere, do anything he asked. Now they're talking about stoning him. He's got nobody. He's got nothing. He's a broken man. In a place of brokenness, in the place of desperation, what does David do? He strengthens himself the only way that he could strengthen himself. And that was in the Lord. And we talked about it on Sunday, but we have to recognize that we ourselves were weak, right? It took a while, but David finally got to a place of recognizing that he was weak. He wasn't so mighty. He wasn't able to conquer everybody and everything. He actually was recognizing now he's at the place, the lowest place, a place of brokenness, a place of recognizing his weakness, and then finally saying, now I will strengthen myself in the Lord. He was done making selfish decisions. He recognized that he needed the Lord's help. So many times we put ourselves through so much because of our own bad decisions. And it takes so long for us to get to a place of recognizing that we are desperate, that we are weak, that we are broken people who need to strengthen ourselves in the Lord. But rather, like we talked about Sunday morning, if we put on the armor of God, every day that we're putting that armor on, that's what Paul was talking about when he said, be strong in the Lord, strengthening yourself in the Lord. Be strong in the Lord and put on the armor. It's so that we're prepared for the battle. It's so that we're prepared for the attacks. It's so that we're prepared for when the bad things happen. It's to protect us from ourselves. It's to protect us from making those bad decisions. So we put on that armor, which is putting on the Lord Jesus Christ. It's living according to the Spirit rather than according to the flesh. So David was in that place. He came to that place of recognizing he's weak, he's desperate, he's broken, he's done with making these bad decisions, and he needed help desperately from the Lord. So he strengthened himself in the Lord. Verse 7, then David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, please bring the ephod here to me. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. So David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. What a great promise from God. But this is what God does. It's a work of redemption. It's an offering of mercy. Because David had messed up big time, and now they come to this place of desperation. And what does he do? He strengthens himself in the Lord. As he's strengthening himself in the Lord, he's saying, I need to get on my knees. I need to be with Jesus. I need to be with the Lord. That's what we do. That's how we do it. That's how we're going to strengthen ourselves in the Lord, is get on our knees before the Lord. Spend time with him. If you got problems, just get on your knees. Because what's going to happen is that in the midst of just seeking the Lord, your perspective is going to change in the midst of your problems. Your circumstance might not always change, but it also might. If you give it to the Lord, you let him do the work with it. But more importantly than that, your perspective, your heart, your mind is going to change. And God is going to work in you. He's going to perform a miracle in your life. And so this is that work of redemption that's taking place, right? David, in starting to seek the Lord, it's not like God just turned his back and said, David, yeah, I tried, man. You know, you weren't crying out to me. You were making your own decisions, and now I'm just going to leave you alone to do whatever you want to do. And when David came back to him and started strengthening himself in the Lord, and what he's doing and taking up the ephod, and he's taking, this is the priest's clothes. This is the robe that the priest would wear in going before the Lord, and he's saying, give it to me. I need to be close to the Lord. I need to be with him. I need to do everything possible to be as close as I can to him. And so he puts it on so that he can seek the Lord and draw near to the Lord. And as he's seeking the Lord, he's asking for that help. But God doesn't turn his back. This is another just great example of God's mercy. you know, sometimes with my kids, they're doing something they shouldn't do. And I tell them, guys, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. And they ask why. Because I said so, that's why. You know, and as parents, we realize we have plenty of reasons why they shouldn't do what they do. But most of the time, it's to protect them. There's many things that my kids do that I'm like, man, somebody's getting hurt in 5 seconds if I don't stop them. And so we say, don't do that. Why? Because you're going to break your face. You know, something terrible is about to happen if you don't stop. And this is what God is doing. And he's directing us. He's leading us. And he tells us, don't do that. Why? Because I don't want you to fall and hurt yourself. But yet we do it anyway. David, he went and did what he wanted anyway. And then when everything falls apart, God doesn't say, David, I told you so. Sometimes with my kids, I'm like, nah, you see, that's why I told you not to do it, you know? Or I'll say to my wife, I'm like, it's fine, leave him alone. He'll learn a lesson. You know, this is what we do. We all do it. We're laughing because parents are like, yeah, I do that all the time. But we do exactly that. And we'll perhaps be like, no, I'm not, too bad. This is what happens. But most of the time what happens is when they actually do hurt themselves, what do? With the heart of a parent, we're going to go and we're going to scoop them up and make sure they're not broken. Make sure there's dust them off. Make sure there's not something terrible that's gone wrong. You know, and use it as an opportunity to teach them. But what that really is mercy. And that's what God is giving to David is mercy. He's not saying, David, you messed up, man. Just leave me alone. I don't want to hear about your problems anymore. God doesn't do that. God doesn't do that to us. And there's so many times that we're going to mess up. There's so many times we're going to be in that place of recognizing, I can't believe this. The city is burned to the ground. All the people are taken captive. And look what I've done. And we hang our head in shame, but in going to the Lord, he's always going to say, all right, let's take care of this. And that's what he does to David. Let's take care of this, David. And David is genuine and broken and goes to him and says, Lord, I gotta find out from you what you want me to do. So he asks and he says, shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them? He's asking, he's saying, look here, like me and my mighty men, we can do this. We're capable. But he stops and he's, Lord, should we go for it? Should we pursue this troop? Because he's recognizing if God is with him, good things are going to happen. He's recognizing that if he is doing the will of the Lord, then it's going to happen the right way. If David just pursued his own way, maybe they end up doing something even worse. We don't know, but he gets an answer from the Lord. He answered him, he says, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them and without fail recover all. It's not even just a matter of like overtake them and wipe them out, make them pay. No, you're going to recover everything. You're going to be, that idea of recovering is being made whole. To recover, it's to be made whole. Right now, David is lacking. He's got some major gaps in his life, and all these men, they've got some major gaps, but they're going to come to a place, and God is going to make them whole so that they could recover everything. So David, verse 9, he went, he and 600 men who were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those stayed who were left behind. But David pursued, he and 400 men, for 200 stayed behind who were so weary that they could not cross the brook Besor. The journey begins. This journey of revenge, so to speak. But it's not just David's heart to avenge his people and to avenge his city. It's the word from the Lord. It's the direction from the Lord. And in that, he's going forward and he's pursuing in obedience. And sometimes we think we know what's spiritual. We think we know what God might want us to do. But when we ask and God speaks, God gives a clear word, we can move forward in confidence. It's that heart that Moses had when he's saying, if your presence goes, I don't want to stay. And if your presence stays, I don't want to go. I just want to be where your presence is, the presence of the Lord. As they were going around the desert for 40 years, he's saying, I just want to be in the presence of God. And that's what we need. That's what a man after God's own heart is. That's what David is, the man after God's heart. Being led by the Lord, directed by the Lord. And so now they're pursuing in obedience. They're fighting in obedience to the Lord. Done fighting for themselves. Done fighting for the Philistines. Done pursuing all these other things and selfish decisions, selfish ideas. But they're pursuing the leading of the Lord. It's obedience. And as they walk forward in obedience, now what's happening though is now these men, out of the 600, 200 stay behind. Because why? It says they're weary. And the reality of what we need to understand is that out of these mighty, mighty men, that's what these guys were. They were David's mighty men. These guys were no joke. Some serious warriors. And out of those mighty men, there was 200 of them that stayed behind because they were so weary. They were so weary. Why? They needed to take a break because of all they had been through. All they had been through. It wasn't about the battle that they had faced. It wasn't about just physically being tired. They just lost everything. They just lost their homes. They just lost their families. And those are the things, it makes you so weary. It attacks your soul. It attacks your spirit. That's just, man, this is so heart-wrenching. And so these 200 men are in that place saying, I just need time. And we're going to see later on how David and the other 400 men, how they respond to those 200 men. But we go on in this. Now they're in this journey. They're walking in obedience. In verse 11, then they found an Egyptian in the field and brought him to David. And they gave him bread and he ate. And they let him drink water. And they gave him a piece of a cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. So when he had eaten, his strength came back to him. For he had eaten no bread nor drunk water for 3 days and three nights. Then David said to him, to whom do you belong and where are you from? And he said, I am a young man from Egypt, servant of an Amalekite. And my master left me behind because 3 days ago I fell sick. We made an invasion of the southern area of the Cherethites in the territory which belongs to Judah and of the southern area of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire. And David said to him, can you take me down to this troop? So he said, swear to me by God that you will neither kill me nor deliver me into the hands of my master, and I will take you down to this troop. This is a convenient friendship that's happening right now for David and his men. They come across this young man, an Egyptian man, who was a servant of the Amalekites, right? And what they come across him, he's sick, he fell ill, they left him behind. And so now they find him in the desert, and they're like, hey, what's going on here? And they're kind to him. They give him bread, they give him water, they give him fig cakes. And you know, that's sustenance. That's something that's going to help him build up strength, to bring him back to strength. You know, it's like you're out, they give him some Gatorade, you know, like, hey man, here you go. You need some electrolytes in you. That's the idea of the figs, the cakes, that's going to give him that strength back, help him replenish the nutrients in his body. So they're kind to him. They're caring for him. And so what we see is David's not a man just on a mission right now. He's not a man just that's about avenging his people and avenging his city. He's a man after God's heart. He's a man walking in obedience. And when he sees this young man who's in trouble, he has a heart of mercy. If he was a man on a mission at this point, just looking out to avenge his city, he would be like, man, forget that guy. We got a job to do. They wouldn't pay any attention to him, but they stop. And they spend time with him and they care for him. And as they do, God says, hey, great decision, because there's a little something here for you. It's a convenient friendship that's happening. This is a servant of the Amalekites, and he's scorned by the Amalekites. He's angry. He said, yeah, they left me behind because I got sick. My masters just kicked me to the curb, and they kept going. So David's like, yeah, so, you know, me and the Amalekites have a little beef too. How about we strike a bargain? You know, David's saying, hey, take me to him. Let's go. And the young man looks out for himself as well, saying, all right, if you spare my life, If you don't deliver me over to that master, you know, don't reveal who I am or how you found them, I'll bring you right to him. It's a good, convenient friendship that's taking place here. So that's what's going on now. Verse 16, they continue on. And when he had brought him down there, they were spread out all over the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil which they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. Then David attacked them from twilight until the evening of the next day. Not a man of them escaped except 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. So David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives, and nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, sons or daughters, spoil, or anything which they had taken from them. David recovered all. Remember, just as God promised. Then David took all the flocks and herds, and they had driven before those other livestock and said, "This is David's spoil." I'd say this is a bit of a victory, right? There's a victory taking place. The victory is not just the fact that they found the Amalekites and they recovered everything. The victory is that they walked in obedience to the Lord. They pursued in obedience rather than pursuing and out of their selfish ambition, out of their own motivation. They pursued in obedience to the Lord. And as they did that, God delivered, because that's what God does. God delivers as we walk in obedience. God delivers us from our sin, and God delivers into our hands the things that he needs to give us. The things that he has power over, we need deliverance. How do we get that? We walk in obedience. We surrender to him. We do what he asks. But it starts with seeking him. It starts with coming to the Lord, pressing into the presence of the Lord, desiring to be with him as David was. And that's how David got that direction, was because he wanted to be with the Lord, because he spent that time with the Lord. So they recovered everything. They attacked all day, all night. They attacked. And they were victorious. And that's the David's spoil became something greater than ever imagined. And it's because of obedience. Simple obedience rather than simple selfishness. God does exceedingly and abundantly beyond all that we can ask. David might have thought everything is lost, and we might go and capture, you know, and destroy this Amalekites, but we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what we're going to recover other than God promised, right? And because God promised, God delivered. Recognizing that God follows through, and they did recover all. Because of obedience, God does great things. In verse 21, now David came to the 200 men who had been so weary that they could not follow David, whom they also had made to stay at the brook Besor. So they went out to meet David and to meet the people who were with him. And when David came near the people, he greeted them. Then all the wicked and worthless men of those who went with David answered and said, "Because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil that we have recovered, except for every man's wife and children, that they may lead them away and depart." So now you have David and his 400 men, and then all of the women and the children and all the things that they've recovered. And they come back, and David, it says that he greeted them. This is a greeting that he was glad to see them. He was happy to come back to those 200 who admitted they were so weary they could not go on. And David comes to them with gladness that he's saying, "Here, I've got great things for you." In the same way that God looks at us and says, "Here, I've got great things for you." And yet there were those wicked people, self-seeking people still, who said, no, they shouldn't get anything because they didn't come with us into battle, because they didn't pursue with the rest of us. And there are people that are going to have that same attitude. We know Jesus tells a parable that's very similar. I was just explaining this to my kids recently, this concept, because everything has to be fair. Just last week, I'm driving with them in the car, and it's like one person got this, you know, snack, and then there wasn't enough for the other. "That's no fair. They shouldn't get any of it." No, guys, stop. Everything doesn't always have to be fair. And then I told him the parable of the workers in the vineyard, right? You guys know the story, the workers in the vineyard. You have this guy who shows up to work, and the guy, he says, I'll pay you a day's wages. You work for me all day. Great, sounds good. They make a deal. Then a few hours later, the next one comes. I'll pay you a day's wages if you work for me the rest of the day. Okay, great, they make a deal. Then if somebody comes late in the day, only a couple hours left, and he says, I'll pay you a day's wages if you work for me the rest of the day. Okay, great. And then the end of the day, comes time to pay him, and he pays the guy who worked only a couple hours, the guy who worked half the day, the guy who worked the full day, and the guy who worked the full day. He says, hey, these guys did nothing. I've been working all day. Why am I getting the same as them? And the owner of the vineyard, the master, says, have I not done what I've agreed to? It's his to give. The money, the payment is his to offer. And that's the deal that he struck with these different workers. And this same heart there is that David is saying, whoa. Just because these guys admitted that they were weary and they stayed to rest because that's what they needed doesn't mean that they miss out on the spoil. And so that's where the heart of these men are like, man, it shouldn't be this way. It should only be fair. They could just have their wives and their children back. And we'll give them that. That's enough. But David said in verse 23, my brethren, you shall not do so with what the Lord has given us, who has preserved us and delivered into our hands the troop that came against us. For what will he do you in this matter? But as his part is who goes down to the battle, so shall his part be who stays by the supplies. They shall share alike. He implements this for the army. He says, no, this is the way it's going to be. It doesn't matter who stays or who goes. If the Lord gives this to us, if the Lord delivers it, who are we to withhold it? Because it's not ours anyway. In the same way, God's grace has been bestowed upon us, his love bestowed upon us. Who are we to withhold that grace? Who are we to withhold that love? And we might get angry at somebody because they've done something that we don't like. They've wronged us in some way. They cut us off on the road or they cut in front of us in line at the store that we've been waiting for like an hour. And like, oh, you don't understand. And we think that God's grace and God's love is not for them, right? It's only fair. If they're going to be that rotten, then I'll take the grace. I'll take that love and I will not allow them to have it. Well, it's not ours. Who do we think we are? And that's what David is doing. He's putting his men in their place and he's saying, God has done the work. God has given freely to us and he's delivered into our hands. So who are we to say, no, they can't have what God has given? Don't withhold the grace of God. God has bestowed upon us his grace and his love so that we might share, not withhold. So this division is happening, but David puts everybody in their place. And then verse 26, now when David came to Ziklag, he sent some of the spoil to the elders of Judah, to his friends, saying, here's a present for you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord. To those who are in Bethel, those who are in Ramoth of the south, those who were in Jatir, those who were in Aroer, those who were in Sifmoth, those who were in Eshtemoa, those who were in Rakal, those who were in the cities of the Jerahmeelites, those who were in the cities of the Kenites, those who were in Hormah, those who were in Chorashan, those who were in Athek, those who were in Hebron, and to all the places where David himself and his men were accustomed to rove. So now David comes back, and he is sending out peace offerings. In the places that they have rove, they've come against, they've destroyed, and now he's sending out peace offerings. Here's all of the spoil, and here's David trying to restore relationship. Because as much as is up to him, he might be at peace with all men. Romans tells us that, right? As much as is up to us, we might be at peace. So he's sending out peace offerings. He's saying, here's a gift for you. Here's a gift for you. These are all people that he's come against, that he's wronged. And so he's saying, I'm sorry. And he's making peace. He mended relationships that he destroyed in the first place. It's a long journey. Restoration is a long journey. And David realized all that he had done. Nobody even had to come to him at this point and say, hey, David, you did all these things and they were really bad. You need to do something to fix it. But he realized, and over time, he came to that place of sending out those peace offerings, of making things right and restoring relationships that he destroyed. And so what happened with David? He had some lapse in judgment. He had some time of backsliding. But what does he do? He comes back to the Lord. And you could always come back to the Lord. And as you come back to the Lord, he's not going to turn his back on you. He's not going to push you away. He's not going to say, I told you so. He's going to direct you. He's going to help you restore. He's going to help you recover. That's what he does with David. Recover and restore. And what's so great is that recovering all this spoil wasn't about building up David's riches and his kingdom. It was about making things right. Because David understood that it was more important for him to walk in obedience to the Lord, to make things right. And so we continue to chapter 31, which we've already studied on a Sunday morning 2 weeks ago. Topically, but now we're just going to go through it quickly, these 13 verses, and looking at the end of the very first king of Israel. Verse 1, now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. Then the Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchishua, Saul's sons. So we're starting out again this chapter. This is another scene. If you can imagine, there's like you're watching a series, and the episode that just happened was David, and now episode 2 is Saul. And these are happening separately, but what's going on is the Philistines are coming against Israel, and Israel is admitting defeat. And as they're admitting defeat, they're fleeing. The Philistines then follow, and they pursue hard after the king and his sons. And they defeat the sons of Saul, Jonathan, Abinadab, Malchishua. Battle in verse 3 became fierce against Saul. The archers hit him, and he was severely wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell on it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his sword and died with him. So Saul, his three sons, his armor bearer, and all his men died together that same day. This is a bad scene. This is a bad situation. The Philistines have destroyed Saul, his army, his sons. They wiped them out. It's the end of Saul. It's the end of his sons. And it is a heartbreaking, tragic, tragic end. A tragic death of what we're seeing. Like I said, they were fleeing. And then they were pursued and killed. And Saul, recognizing he was so wounded, he told his armor bearer, stab me through. Finish the job. Because I don't want to give them the satisfaction. The thing with Saul is that even in the midst of death, he's still holding on to his pride of life. And as this armor bearer would not do it, he sees him, no, I'm not doing that. I can't possibly. And Saul falls on his own sword, making this tragic end even that much more tragic that he does it himself. And then the armor bearer taking his sword and falling onto himself. It's just adding to it more and more and more. It's all piling up, and it's really a sad, tragic situation. Verse 7, and when the men of Israel who were on the other side of the valley and those who were on the other side of the Jordan saw that the men of Israel had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. So the Philistines have taken over the valley, taken over the area, and it happened the next day when the Philistines came to strip the slain that they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. So they've taken over the camp. They've taken over the valley because everybody else had fled. They recognized their king, the sons of the king. They're all dead. And so they all flee. They run away. The army is defeated. And now the Philistines come and they start to take over and they start to go and plunder. They want to take the clothes, take the weapons, take the armor, take up all the things that they could and strip them away from anything that they had left. And then they see the king, Saul. They see the sons of Saul. They're dead. And what do? They desecrate. Verse 9, they cut off his head and stripped off his armor. And sent word throughout the land of the Philistines to proclaim it in the temple of their idols and among the people. Then they put his armor in the temple of the Ashtoreths, and they fastened his body to the wall at Beth-shan. The idea of what's taking place, they are waving this around like a banner, proclaiming how great they are. A wicked people are proclaiming that they have defeated the king of Israel. Saul, they cut off his head and they're sending word out to everywhere and they bring him to Beth-shan. It's a place that we go to when we go on our trips to Israel. And it is a gorgeous, amazing city in the whole region there, between the Galilee region and Jerusalem. It's this high up, there's a tell there, and it's this high up, their temple was at the top. And you could see it from miles around, and that's where they would bring to worship their gods. They would come and worship there, and they bring the bodies there, and they strap them to the wall to glorify their idols. The death of Saul would bring glory to pagan gods. Verse 11, now when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and traveled all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Beth-shan, and they came to Jabesh and burned them there. Then they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. They came and made this proper. They made it a proper burial. They made it a proper funeral. And what's so, in the midst of all this, the death of Saul brought this glory to pagan gods. God would not allow it. And so these valiant men, God will raise up valiant men when things are completely doomed. When things look really bad, God raises up valiant men. And that's our prayer, is not just to watch and see that there might be others who would be raised up, but that we might be those men, those women, valiant people who would be raised up to do the hard work. When they came to Beth-shan, they took down the bodies and they brought them back to Jabesh-Gilead because they recognized this is not an acceptable thing to do. This is desecrating the king. And God raises up valiant men to do the right things, to do the hard things. And they traveled all night to do it. Makes it very clear that it's hard work and that they came at night. They came in secret to take those bodies down and to bring them back and to do things the proper way. And that's what they did. They burned the bodies the way that they should have been, and they took the bones and buried them the way that it should be. And then they fasted 7 days. In that day, that when they would fast and they would mourn, that's what was happening. This is the proper burial, the proper funeral ceremony that they believed this is what the king, this is the way that it should be done. Not these pagan gods being glorified, not their bodies being, you know, put out there for everyone to see and waved around like a banner of triumph. But God raises up his people to take on those situations, to take on those difficult times, to take on the hard work, to do things that are kind of messy, kind of ugly, and facing down those difficult decisions. Will we be those valiant men, those valiant women that God is desiring to use to do those things that nobody wants to do? So we learn through these chapters, we learn of David turning from his own selfish decisions, walking in obedience to the Lord. As we walk in obedience, God recovers and restores. And we have to keep walking in obedience to see those things actually happen. If we just make one decision of obedience, we can't expect everything to be solved. I think that's what we look for, like the one and done. Press a button, microwave mentality. You know, it's done. 30 seconds, ding, and I've got my meal. But sometimes it's more like a crock pot, a slow cooker. And it takes time. You got to wait all day sometimes for that meal, but it's so much better than the microwave meal. But this is what God is doing. If we take those steps of obedience and more steps of obedience and not just that one and expect everything to be solved, but keep moving forward, then we'll see God recover and restore. And we see just this sad end to Saul, to his sons, to this kingdom, the first king. It's a sad thing to see. It's a sad thing to recognize that the people had desired so desperately for a king, and that very king was not a good king, and then the end of him was very, very tragic. It's a sad thing to see. But we know ultimately God would bring redemption, and he would recover and restore the kingdom through Jesus Christ, the line of David. Because of what? Because of obedience. Philippians tells us that Jesus was obedient even to the point of death on the cross. Jesus, the Son of God, the King of Kings, he brought that full restoration to the kingdom, brought that full recovery. It just took a long time to see. But what does it take? It takes steps of obedience.